irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, we're supposed to have with us a very special guest, Liz Ryan, although I think we're having a little bit of technical difficulties getting her on the line right now, so she might be joining us a little bit later in the show. So today, we're going to do a different sort of a show than one we've done before until Liz joins us on the air. And that is, if anybody has any questions related to your career or any issues or obstacles that you're currently facing, you can certainly ask myself while we're live on the air, or Liz when she joins us. So in case you have not called the LA Talk Radio studio in the past, the phone number that you can call into is 323-203-0815. Again, that number is 323-203-0815, and we will be taking calls as available throughout the show to talk about different situations and obstacles that people are facing in their career. And then when Liz joins us, we'll also be able to have Liz help answer any questions that you might have. So let's start the show by talking about an interesting subject that we've been seeing a lot right now in the workplace. Because of the fact that things have shifted so dramatically in the last 3 years in the job hunting world, which is exactly what Liz's book, Reinvention Roadmap, talks about, we've seen a huge shift from an employer market to an employee market. And in fact, right before I got on the phone today, I had a client on the phone who was telling me that they wanted to hire XYZ sort of person out in California, and they're in New York office. So what I had to explain to them is that salaries have increased so dramatically that the sort of person they were looking for 5 or 6 years ago might have only cost them something like, I don't know, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000. But now, because those people are in such high demand, those people can actually go for upwards of $140,000 to $150,000 because of supply and demand in the market. So what does this mean for you as a job seeker? What it means is it's a great time to make a career change. But the thing I want to caution any of our listeners against, and I know I say this week after week in many of the shows that we do, is don't move for the sake of moving. When Liz and I were actually doing our pre-show check-in call, we were talking about how it's my job actually, Stop Hoping, Start Hunting, was a different sort of a book. It was a book that was geared towards the end of the recession and how do we handle it and how do you find a job when there aren't jobs out there. Well, in Liz's book, she talks about a different plan. She actually talks about treating your career as though it's a Fortune 500 company and a business. Now, what does this mean to you? What that means is you want to take the reins of your career and guide it. Rather than sitting there passively and reacting to different job opportunities that maybe get presented to you, you might want to start with something simple, something like a wish list. Now, in my book, Stop Hoping, Start Hunting, I talk about how important it is to start by writing down everything you could possibly want with respect to your career. So what does that look like? For some people, it might be an important salary. For other people, it could be location or having the right benefits. Other folks, the right environment or who they're working with or the actual duties that they're taking on might be more important to them. So this year in 2017, if you're ready to make that jump and go after that next job, before you apply for your first job or set foot in your initial interview, the first thing you want to do is you want to write down what it is you're looking for. So your wish list is what I call it. It might have 5 items on it, or it might have 50 items on it. And irrespective of how many items are going to be on your wish list, it's important to understand what is most important to you. I see so many of us in the job market get razzled dazzled by the wrong job. Somebody comes at you and they offer you a lot of money or a fancy title or a great corner office, and we put out the door all the things that were actually important to us, perhaps work-life balance or good benefits, and then we just jump at an opportunity because it's shiny and different and new. So what I encourage you to do is sit down with your wish list and give each item a percentage. So what does that look like? What I mean by that is, so say being within 5 miles of your house is important, maybe because you have dogs or kids or whatever that you need to be close by for. In that case, you might want to give that a higher percentage of your overall wish list. Whether you have 5 items or 50 items, those items should all total up percentage-wise as far as what's important to you to 100%. So in the example I just gave, where say you had a 5-item wish list, and one of the items on your wish list was location, being 5 miles from your house. That might actually be 30% of your overall wish list, with another 20% being salary of over $50,000 or more, and another 10% being good benefits, and whatever, so on and so forth, that winds up being important to you. Now, once you've come up with your overall wish list and you understand what it is that's important to you, and you can look at that and see, okay, this is 100% of exactly what I want, then what you can go ahead and do is ask yourself the really important question that so many of us fail to think about before we ever set foot in our first interview. And that's the come to Jesus question that you need to ask yourself. What percentage of my overall wish list do I need in order to be able to move forward on a job and move forward with accepting an offer? Now, if you can actually have an honest conversation with yourself before you ever start interviewing, and you know, talk to your significant other or whoever else it might impact, your family, if it would impact them, and say to yourself, okay, looking at this objectively, I can see that I need 70% or more of my wish list to be met in order to move forward on pursuing a new opportunity. If that's the case, you now have a roadmap before you go into any interview and after every interview to look at how every job you apply for, interview for, go after, how it lines up with what you're looking for. And after each interview, I encourage each of you then to go back and reflect upon your wish list and to look at it and ask yourself, okay, did this meet enough of my wish list for me to actually warrant moving forward in a new direction with a new position? Let's be honest, changing jobs is not something easy. It's not something that, you know, don't get me wrong, it can be easy, but it's not something that is fun. It's like moving a house. There's a lot of cleanup to do and a lot of boxes to put away. And the same is true whether you've been at a job for 6 months, 6 years, or 30 years. There's always going to be results and things that you have to do when you make a career change or a change to a new position. So I encourage each of you, before you start on your job hunt, create your wish list. Use that as your roadmap to help guide you and determine what direction do you need to go and what is the right next step for you and for your career. So the next step after that, once you've created a great wish list, is figuring out where to find jobs. Liz was great. In fact, she sent me a copy of her book, Reinvention Roadmap, and there were some great points in there that she talked about. What we've noticed since it's flipped over from an employer market to an employee market is that people are now getting hired in totally different ways. In Liz's book, she talks about how you can actually circumvent the old antiquated recruiting process and reach out to hiring managers directly. Now, some of you might find that to be a daunting task and saying to yourself, well, gosh, how would I even know the right person to reach out to? The great thing is, for the first time ever with LinkedIn, you now have access to seeing who the hiring managers are at the companies and corporations that you want to work at. And even better than that, you can look at your competition. So what do I mean by that? When I talk to somebody, in fact, there was someone last week who hadn't really put together a LinkedIn profile before, and the first thing I told her to do is to look at the people who had the jobs she wanted. Now, that could look many different ways. You might not know the company you want to work at, so you might just want to, per se, look up and Google search that title in all companies in your general area. And what you might find out is a couple of things. One, you can look at the career trajectory of those people. How did they get to that role at that particular company? What companies did they work at? Are those companies you might be interested in working at? And I think this is actually Liz calling in, so give me one moment so we can join her. Liz, is that you?
Hey, it is, yeah.
Hi, Liz. Thanks so much. We were just starting to talk a little bit about your book. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Not in the slightest. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Okay, so I didn't get into your bio yet because I want to make sure our listeners know a little bit about you. Obviously, you're one of the top, actually the top most well-read HR and career expert in the world. But since you're joining us now, I would love to tell our listeners a little bit about your background and your bio. So Liz Ryan is a former Fortune 500 Human Resources Senior Vice President and, as I just said, the world's most widely read career advisor. Liz is the CEO and founder of Human Workplace, a think tank and publishing whose mission is to reinvent work for people. Liz is the architect, I love that word, of the Human Workplace vision and the beloved career advisor to millions of working people and job seekers around the world. Liz was the Senior Vice President of HR for U.S. Robotics during its rise from a $15 million company to a $2.5 billion company in annual sales, and was co-founder and VC-funded of a networking startup called Eucentric Systems before its acquisition by Motorola. Liz was CEO and founder of World WIT, the world's largest online community for professional women, before founding Human Workplace in 2012 to reinvent work for people. Liz writes for Forbes, LinkedIn, and many other publications, and is a sought-after and evangelical international keynote speaker. Liz earned her BS from Loyola University of Chicago and an MS in communication from Northwestern University. She lives in Boulder, Colorado with her husband, 5 children, 2 dogs, and 2 cats. And when Liz is not writing or speaking or drawing, she sings opera professionally. So thank you so much, Liz, for joining us today.
Oh, not at all, Jennifer. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I just started to tell our listeners a little bit about your book, about how much I was enjoying it and, you know, just what you were talking about how much the market has shifted and how things have changed so dramatically in the last several years for job seekers out there in the world. So tell our listeners a little bit about how you came to write Reinvention Roadmap.
Well, I think that, you know, I was an HR person, like you said, for a million gazillion years, and I loved it, but I also saw, I mean, it was very obvious, come on, let's be honest, from the inside, how much was really broken in recruiting and just the practice of HR generally. And I was very fortunate because I worked for great companies. And I think, you know, I took it as my mission, not having had any training in HR before I got into it, just to make it an awesome place to work and have that sort of be the guiding principle. And it never fails. You know, it just never fails. In terms of everything you might care about, from profitability to, you know, hanging on to great people and having them be excited and bringing their friends and just that energy that you create. It's the whole thing. And I knew that was a relatively uncommon viewpoint. And I said, well, that's something I got to work on later in my life when I have more free time and I don't have little kids running around. And then when I left, you know, U.S. Robotics, which is going to be 20 years ago this summer, it was sold and it was very, you know, it was traumatic for everybody. We're like, wow, we love our team. We love the energy. Well, you know, you're sent back out into the desert and you have to look around and say, so what is my real path here? And you go through that a couple of times. And I went through it again after I left that startup you mentioned, Eucentric Systems, 2001. I'm like, all right, so do I know how to do anything? I can't remember. Oh, my God. It's a very scary thing. You've been through that.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Reinvention.
Yeah.
And I said, what? Well, who's talking about this? How do you? And also, The whole idea of long-term employment is completely gone. It's not coming back. People are learning they have, you know, if you think about like a freight train going down the track, the cars are the actual jobs. And then there's spaces between the cars where you're not working, right? And it's like the spaces sometimes now are longer than the actual, you know,
jobs
part of the freight train with cars on it. And you're like, is it part of my job to learn how to get a job over and over? Yes, my darling, it absolutely is. For all of us now. It's not an occasional thing. Oh, every 9 years, I guess I'll look around, see where my best fortune lies. It isn't like that. You cannot expect to hang on to a job for 5 years just because you do a good job. And everybody knows that now. And we're sort of waking up to this reality that it's on us. We're entrepreneurs. And that's what the book is. Let's talk about how to survive and thrive, given that we are entrepreneurs. And we do need to learn a completely different way to think about our careers and to get a job, starting with, you know, to break some rules.
Yeah, I love what you talk about in your book about running your career like a business. I think that is probably, if our listeners get nothing else out of today's show, I would love for you to elaborate on that, because that's what I really took away from what I read of your book, is just running your job search like a business and your career like a business. Mm-hmm. It's what you and I know 100%. How to do, but it, tell mm-hmm. our listeners, how do you even go about doing that? What does that mean to run your career like a business?
Yep. It's such a great question. You know, I grew up, I'm older than you, I'm sure, and I grew up, you know, in a time when you got a job. I'm just on the cusp of what, like, my older sisters got more of the message, you know, as a woman, you can be a secretary, teacher, nurse. That's kind of it. I'm maybe just on the south side of that. But I still was very much the era of, you're going to get a job and you're going to have a job 20 years, 25 years. A lot of people that we knew, all the dads, some of the moms worked, but all the dads had jobs for years and years and on end. Very unusual for it to be otherwise. It's your company and you move up the ladder and you get promoted at regular intervals.
If you're lucky and you just get the gold watch at the end of it.
The whole thing. The whole entire thing. It's a paradigm that was so fixed, and so many movies and books written about it. And it's what I grew up in, and people didn't question. And now we have to question everything. Because there is no job, very few jobs are going to last 20 years. And frankly, the jobs that do last for ages are typically the ones that give you the least marketable stuff to take to the next people. Because they're sedentary, they're slower in terms of the knowledge acquisition, if you will. And certainly the muscles that we need looking at the market, what's the pain? What pain do I solve? What is that pain cost employers? That's leverage. And this idea of running your career like a business is owning all of that information, getting altitude on your career instead of saying, I had a job, I lost a job, I need a new job, and sort of letting everything above the level of that transaction be somebody else's concern. Well, who is this business? Who runs it? Are they smart? Where do they come from? What's their track record? What do we know about them? What about the market itself? Is it solid? Do you trust them? These are questions we never ask. Just go through the steps. Get the first interview, have the second. Oh, she was kind of, I hated her. She was a horrible interview, but at least I made it through. No, baby doll. Stop and look at that. If they stick somebody on the front line who's a horrible wretch, you really want to work there? That's a set of decisions that they made, that these people made to put that in. You know, take nothing for granted. That's my message.
Good message.
That's running your career like a business. You know, we all say your house is your biggest investment and your biggest financial whatever dealings in your lifetime. I beg to differ. How about your career? It's much bigger than for most people than their house, in terms of the total earnings, but also in terms of how you actually get to spend your earthly time on the planet.
I know. What is it? 80% of every week.
Question. Let's not degrade work to the lowest level. I need a paycheck. I got bills. Okay, I'll take this job. Let's lift it up. And that's really what Human Workplace is about, and that's what the book is about.
Interesting. Yeah, and I agree with that completely. It was so funny. Liz and I were talking because I remember when Liz first came out on LinkedIn and you were writing all these great articles, and me being a recruiter for the last 14 plus years, I was kind of off put the first time I heard you saying things in your articles like, don't tell recruiters how much you're making. I got my feathers ruffled a little bit. I was like, who is this woman saying this sort of stuff? And what's great, though, is you're right. Things that was right around, you know, 2014, 2015, things have changed dramatically. And the power has shifted from the employer to the employee. And the funny thing is, I think that the employees have always had the power, but it's only now that we're starting to learn to own it, thanks to your book and articles and the things that you've written, is you're giving the power back to the people, I would say.
Jennifer, very well put. And that's why you're a guru, girl.
I have
because
my moments.
That is the thing. When you lift up, I love recruiters and some recruiters to hate my guts for exactly the reason that you said. And do I blame them? No, because they're steeped in a certain kind of tea. You know what I mean? They're steeped in the tea. I don't blame them. We all have, believe me, the number of layers I've shed of HR sludge, I was a different person 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think I tried to make a great environment everywhere I worked, but come on, you take in the toxic lemonade, you can't even help it.
You drink the cold.
And I'm sure there was nonsense spouting from my lips every single day, but I would interview candidates and I would sit there with smart people, well-read, curious, inquisitive, amazing people every day, and talk to them. And maybe once or twice a week, somebody would say something that would be so off-putting to me. I'm sure it showed in my face. I'd be like, what? Excuse me? That is not what I learned at my HR workshop, yo. And I'd go home and think about it, and I'd be like, that dude was totally right.
Right.
I see what he is saying. And I'm like, I'm learning every day from candidates that say things unguardedly. They're not trying to challenge me, but they say things because it's just, you know, they're talking and they're being themselves and they say it, and it's teaching me. What does that say about openness to learning, you know, at every age?
I think you're right. And I remember you and I talked about that. Is I think the hallmark of being a human being and being an extraordinary human being is being able to admit when you were wrong and be open to other perspectives, even if you still disagree. Like, even if you and I did still disagree, it would be me being open to having a dialogue. And I think if we could invite that and incite that in the workplace for people to generate open lines of communication where their ideas and opinions are valued, honored, and whether or not they're agreed with or not, just have an open mind to see things a different way, that is going to be priceless for you in the business world, because people want to work with people who aren't judgmental and people who are willing to engage in uncomfortable dialogues that might help the growth of the organization. That's something worth putting on your resume.
150%, Jennifer. I couldn't agree more. And I think this idea, you know, the idea that really inspired me to write Reinvention Roadmap was that, you know, what you just said is almost like an invitation to step up to a higher level. Do you know what I mean?
I totally agree.
And say, I'm going to run my career. I'm going to question old beliefs. I'm going to question conventional wisdom. This is why, you know, the book Reinvention Roadmap has the subtitle, How to Break the Rules to Get the Job You Want and Career You Deserve. Break the rules. It's kind of like we've taken in as such, you know, a given. This is the way you apply for a job. You fill out these online applications and you wait for months or they never get back. It's just too bad. You go to the next place. What? No, sweetie. You have something that somebody's going to value. So just like in the dating world, Jennifer, you know,
Yeah. You
have something. As soon as you see it yourself, though, and if you go out there with fear, which is the way job seekers have been taught, even reinforced by the beautiful people at the unemployment office who say, well, you have to apply for five jobs to
and
fill
you'll
in the
never
fire application. Okay,
get
my check. Okay, I will. I know it's a waste of time. These are not the right jobs. This is not the right process. And I'm coming from outside the walls from that other side of the desk. Thank God I never presided over one of these horrible black holes, the Leo, or the rest of them. Nasty, inhuman, talent repelling, nonsense, bad database technology from 1984. But apart from that, you know, I know how difficult it is to be on the outside of the fortress, because I've been writing and speaking to job seekers for the last 20 years, you know. And it's grueling. It's nasty. It's horrible. It's forbidding. And the process only makes it worse. So I'm saying, well, just sail right over that. Like Hedwig brought Harry his letters from Hogwarts School, the witchcraft and wizard, you know. Sail over it, because you're going to find your hiring manager a person, an actual person with a title that you can extrapolate from the title you want and take it up one level. That's not hard. And find them on LinkedIn with an advanced people search, and you're going to write this pain letter, which is not at all like a cover letter. It's talking about them. And it's laid out in the book, and you send them a human voice resume, which is human. It sounds like you, your voice, your power, your stories. You start a conversation. Not all of them, but more of them than you would reach through the, you know, stone lions at the front gate where you march in and submit to the black hole, fill out the online application, and wait and grow old and die.
You're so right. And I wanted to acknowledge you, actually, since you and I last spoke last Monday in preparation for this call. I was talking to the first woman who ever sent me an article by you, the one who I had the disagreement with about her not sharing her salary, and we had a really good laugh about it. But she said to please thank you. She applied the principles in one of your articles about applying the human voice, and she's the head of business development and marketing at a major law firm. And she said, please tell Liz, my law firm just won a major RFP because they got like like 20 submissions from all these different law firms bidding on this project, and she put a human voice in. It had to do with, there was some sort of metro, so it was for the city, and people's lives were lost. And so all these RFPs came through, and they were just very cut and dry and sterile. And she used your words in, or rather, she owned what you said, which was owning her own human voice, and really acknowledged what it must be like for the city to have lost those lives and what they could do to make it better in the long run. And they won a huge RFP, and it was all out of her utilizing her human voice, which she learned from your articles.
I love it. That's a great
I thought
story,
you'd appreciate
Jennifer. Thank
that.
You for passing.
Yes, you're very welcome. Liz, did I lose you? Oops, I think we may have lost Liz. You got to love modern technology. Give me 1 second. We'll give her a call back. So anyways, as I was saying, it's amazing when you can go ahead and utilize your human voice. It can make a huge difference. That one job seeker, it actually helped her escalate to the next level of her career. We'll see if we can get Liz back on the line here. All right, I'll go ahead and have Liz call back in. Ah, the joys of technology. Half the time it works and half the time it doesn't work. It's so funny. I do find that we're actually a slave to technology because when it works great. But God forbid our email, cell phones, Skype, etc. don't work, then you're kind of up Poop Creek without a paddle. So while we're waiting for Liz to rejoin the call right now, I just wanted to reiterate and reemphasize what Liz was talking about. And oh, here comes Liz. Hold on. Liz, I think I lost you. I don't think our technology likes one another.
Oh, exciting day in the telecom world. Where do we? What were we? What was I rambling about,
Jen?
Oh,
we were saying, we were talking about the marketing individual who won the big project, and thank you for sharing that, because I just wanted to tell you, you know, sometimes you never know whether the conversation you and I are having now or your book or an article you wrote might have made a difference in a huge way for somebody, and it all came from owning her voice.
Oh, I appreciate you passing it on.
Yeah, so I thought that was great, and just wanted to make sure to share that bit with you about the human voice.
So do you want, like, an example of what this human voice might sound like, for example, in a resume?
I would love that. That was going to be my next question. You were reading my mind.
Oh, okay. I didn't mean to anticipate your... But, like, a typical resume is written in a language we all know. It's governmental. It's dry. It's terse. It's sentence fragments. It's really like you're reading a government manual, you know, like a packing list for someone who's going off to boot camp, you know? You know what I mean, though? Results-oriented professional with a bottom-line orientation. Motivated self-starter who works well with all levels of staff. Skilled at leading cross-functional teams. You just want to say, why don't you just say, I breathe in oxygen, I breathe out carbon dioxide, something that
be
would be
mundane.
Like a human would say it. This makes no sense. It doesn't help you. It's terrible branding. You sound like everyone. It's gross.
Okay.
It diminishes a person.
So what do we do instead?
So you're going to figure out who you're talking to and what they do. And maybe you're reaching out to a director of an art director at a magazine. No, there's not too many of them left anymore. Art director at a big website, a media website. And you want to be a graphic designer for them. Web design, you know, do your designs. And so you're thinking of your audience like any marketer would. And you say, I got hooked on graphic design halfway through a fine arts degree. Well, that's how this person got into graphic design right away. We know something about them. Not everyone got into graphic design through fine arts, right? Maybe they're a painter or whatever. You're going to find out later on in this novel called Their Human Voice Resume. You're going to scan down and find out. But right now, it's just a little intro, a little teaser. And it uses the word I, for God's sake. It's about you. Of course, you're going to use the word I. So you say, I got hooked on graphic design halfway through a fine arts degree. Now, I love to create sharp, vibrant designs for online publications to catch people's interest and involve them emotionally in our property, whatever.
Hired.
That's
done.
Tough, obviously, wordsmithing on the fly. But you're going to tell them where you came from, what you love to do, because it's the intention in it. It's the power in it is that I'm going to. This is what I'm going to be doing. If you want to join me on my path and I team up with you and join you on your path, we could be Lewis and Clark or whoever, you know? We could be whatever, daring duo, Woody and Buzz. We could do this. But when you come at it from the opposite, I can sew, I can weave, I can spin, Your Majesty. What spell, Majesty, have thy servant do? fits from fear, from desperation. Here's my skills. No. You have those skills, maybe, if we even believe in the construct of skills, which I don't necessarily, unless we're talking technology. I believe in stories. Tell us how you pulled the skills off the shelf and used them when it mattered. Give us a story. And that's what you're going to do in your human voice resume.
I love that. That's brilliant. And so I think part of what you're talking about is actually not just shifting what you're writing on paper, but you're actually talking about a shift in perspective and a shift in your mindset as a job seeker. Would you say that's accurate?
That is beyond accurate, Jennifer. The whole idea in this book, Reinvention Roadmap, and everything I write, you know, for stories and whatever, podcasts and everything, is that we have to change our view and our relationship with our own career. We have to own it and drive it like it's a vehicle. And we have to know that everything we do, everything we don't do, is actually on our shoulders, which feels like a burden and it feels like just one more thing to worry about, but it's actually the opposite. It says, you know what? If I don't like my job, I'm listening to this woman rant on this podcast, and if I don't like my job, it's not that I'm bad and I'm wrong and I should get a better job and I'm just stupid and I'm a slacker and why haven't I done that? It's that I get to decide that when my mojo tank is a little fuller than it is right now, when I just feel a little better and Mother Nature kind of gives me a good little wind at my back, I'm just going to take a little step. And that's just my little private agreement between me and myself that I'm going to do that for myself. Because you know why? Because I deserve to. Because I deserve to be happy in my job and not slog through the day and the week and feel like forces greater than me are keeping me in this state. Maybe they are, but maybe I've decided along with Mother Nature that I need to make those forces bigger right now so that I can kind of hide out and gather my strength. That's okay. But what if I commit to myself that whenever I feel ready, I'm just going to take that little step and maybe I can drive my career? Just never done it. I've never gone through step one, step two, step three, because when I was learning the little bit that I learned about careers in school and high school and college, just said, get a job. And they didn't even tell you how to do it.
So true. They don't teach to this day. I don't think that they teach people.
Not to this day. They try. I have to give huge props to all career services professionals because you know what? I've heard horror stories. They don't get access to the students' email. They don't get to publish announcements about all these career events that they're planning because it's viewed as secondary to the academics, which is absurd. What would be the point of getting like this four-year degree in anthropology or poli-sci or whatever if no one is helping you translate to the world where you actually have to support yourself? It's wrong.
I know. I have to admit something embarrassing. I actually thought about applying to the post office. I had a great degree in psychology from UC Irvine. And when I couldn't apply for law school that year because of a screw up with my transcript, I thought, I was like, oh, mom, dad, what should I do? Maybe I should apply at the post office because I had no idea. I was like, okay, they have good benefits there. But it's like,
you'd be running it by now. You had gone in there, you'd be running it by now.
I know.
I don't have that kind of brain. They give you a test with you have to memorize all these addresses and then recall them. I'd so fail that. If it was Sudoku, I'd kill.
You and
but
me
I
both
can't
love
the
Sudoku. But you're right. It's just so funny is that nobody is taught, and I get it, to all the career services people out there, that's, you know, we get you're doing the best you can with the resources that are given to you. And to all of the graduates at any level, whether you're going back to school for your education or you're recently graduating with a master's or any degree or bachelor's, just understand that, like Liz is saying, you have the power to be accountable for the success or failure of your career, not in a make wrong, like you're a bad person if you're not making the money you want or having the career you want, but you just have an opportunity to look at yourself and say, how could I be an active participant? Like Liz is saying, be the driver, get in the driver's seat. Was it you who was telling me something the other day about that you thought you were in the driver's seat and then all of a sudden you realized you were in the passenger seat of your life? Or maybe I heard that somewhere else, but it may be.
No, I think that was somewhere else. But you said it, Jennifer. It's not an obligation or a burden. It's just the opposite. It's saying, wow, I could steer this thing more in the direction of what I want if I, you know, kind of stop and look at the vehicle itself. Look at, you know, what I'm doing now, what I've done up until now. This is all walking through this book. The first section is called Getting Altitude. And it's stopping and looking at your life and career so far. What am I good at? How have I gotten to use what I'm good at so far in my career? Maybe not at all yet. That's fine. the first part of any person's career is just cracking the code to figure out how to sell what you can do and make enough money to pay the rent. And it's not trivial by any means. It's enormous, and it can, you know, obviously flash back at us and come back at us at any age, 30, 40, 50, 60, like, oh, I thought I had that down. I realize I totally not necessarily didn't, because it's back and I'm back in a financial crunch or down at the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy trying to really just figure out how
survive.
To keep hearth and home together, which is obviously terrifying. And so, you know, it's this idea of you go through a few of those shakes and you go through a few, you know, career disappointments and frustrations or run into obstacles that seem insurmountable. And you say, you know, obviously, I got to take more ownership of this. I can't trust the people around me to just do the right thing, give me the salary increase I deserve. We have to have eyes open and spidey sense on all the time. That's what, you know, all of the stories in this book, Reinvention Roadmap, really illustrate, is that it's not something that you can take a multiple choice test on running your career and pass it, which is the way most of us have learned almost everything we learned in school. I've acquired these facts in my head, and it's very satisfying. Yeah, it is satisfying, but now I'm talking about looking at the landscape around you and noticing the people and really looking at yourself and say, okay, gut level, what can I do that I can make money with? And what talents do I have that I can monetize? This is what entrepreneurs do, and we are all entrepreneurs now. Like it or not, at least we know we're going to grow those entrepreneurial muscles. So the more we can use them, the better.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And it was funny, in reading your book, I know that's one of the first things you talk about, is that you should be A, an entrepreneur in the way you run and pursue your career, and B, it doesn't hurt either to have a side business. One of my own staff, who's awesome and works part-time for us, said, Jen, you know, I know this might be off-putting, but I wanted to put it out there. Since I work for you about 20, 25 hours a week, would you mind if I did a side MLM business? And I said, oh my God, absolutely. You should totally do it. If I can support you with it, teach you social media. I think it's important that a lot of people don't understand, when you run a business on top of the business of your career, you might have both collapsed. In my case or Liz's case, you know, we both get to do what we love and do run our business, and that happens to be our career. But in some cases, it doesn't hurt. I have friends who do Mary Kay or different things on the side, and it helps you to grow, because as you learn to run that side business, it'll help you to understand the distinctions of how your career is like that business and to give you more opportunities. And so I love that I was reading that in your book, and then one of my colleagues happened to bring it up the other day.
I'm fanatical about that, Jennifer. I couldn't agree with you more. Flexing that muscle. I was such a corporate Sally, dyed in the wool to a disgusting degree. I was like, they would joke that if I got cut, my arm would bleed, you know, the company's Pantone color. I was ridiculous in terms of being in love with my job, but also being super dependent on it for my own identity, let's be honest. And many, 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 many people are in that same situation. And so it's the idea of saying, no, you know, things can change. I can make things change. I am completely in charge. I can't blame anybody for things that happen in my career. Yeah, terrible things happen. And there are awful people out there doing destructive things to people at work. We know it. And laying people off unceremoniously and crushing their mojo and treating them badly. Well, what is Mother Nature trying to say? Listen, chickadee, my little duckling, I'm teaching you. Get the lessons. Instead of saying, that guy was a jerk. Okay, he was your jerk, though. You walked into his sphere when you took that job. That doesn't make you bad and wrong. Part of what hurts us, Jennifer, is this, frankly, Western notion, this construct of, you know, somebody else has to be wrong or I have to be wrong. We have to find that person to blame. It's like, how about if nobody's to blame, but it's just, this is the way the wind is blowing. And I was supposed to walk this stretch of path, and I did. And it was painful, and I grew, and I learned something. So now I know. My spidey sense is better. My gut is speaking more loudly to me. I'm listening to it. And I'm going to avoid people like that in the future. It's all good. It's painful learning, but what kind of learning did you want?
And it might.
And so.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I don't know what I was going to say.
Well, you just touched on the gut thing. And I was going to say, I know on my end of the recruitment side, I encourage people so much to listen to their gut and their intuition, because as you and I talked about on the pre-check-in call, is you want to go with someone that your gut likes. And so often, like your spidey sense that you're talking about, everything about us in an interview is tingling and saying, not the right fit, not the right fit. And then that company comes back with an exorbitant offer that you cannot refuse, quote unquote, and you wind up taking a job that you're miserable in. And you just learned a very valuable lesson, and it may be, you know, $100,000 lesson or whatever it takes for you to move on from that job, but it's a lesson that you're choosing. And I think that if our listeners can wrap their minds around that, that everything that happens and occurs in our life is a choice and an opportunity, and it's not something that's happening to us. None of us are ever victims. It's all the powers within us. And if you're 100% accountable for everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly in your life, nothing bad can ever happen to you again, because it's all going to be a choice that you're actively participating in.
It's absolutely reframing. And I think that, you know, it can sound like a scary message. You know, when you say, or I say, well, you know, you're responsible, people are like, I don't want any more responsibility. I have so much. Listen, I say it 1,000 times in this book, and I believe so strongly, you know, kind of basically on the far side of the hill, raising these 5 kids and working full time throughout and all that. It is so not easy. It's just not easy. It's just not easy to get through the day and get through the week. It's very hard to be a grown up. If we're honest, it's hard. It's stressful and it's hard. There's too many things. There's too much confusion. That's forgetting about what's happening in the world, just in your own sphere of your own daily life. It is really hard and stressful. And I think that's a topic that doesn't get enough attention, and everybody feels beat up, mostly everybody, except a few like totally spiritual people we know, you know, feel really like, wow, like, just get my head up above it. You know, it is hard and stressful, too many things on the to-do list. So the first thing that drops out is us, mm-hmm. not as a career, but as a person. Me as a person, taking care of myself as a person. Like, it sounds self-indulgent just when you say it. And how sick is that? That we think, like, well, what if I got some things that I want? How dare you?
How dare you, that,
like,
nerd?
Like little Oliver Twist at the poorhouse. May I have some more gruel? I got out of here, kid. It's so ungrateful. And we hear, oh, you know, be happy you have a job. Be happy you have a job that pays decently. What are you complaining about? And this immediate feeling of shame and guilt that washes over us when we think, no, I think I deserve more. Who are you? No, you don't. The economy's terrible. You have no right. And these messages get embedded. And so the first thing I'm saying in this book, Reinvention Roadmap, and you know, anywhere that I'm speaking or writing or drawing, singing, whatever, is give yourself permission to have a big, crazy dream, a vision. No one's going to know about it. Just give yourself permission, because the clearer that can become, call it crazy, call it fanciful, pie in the sky. So what? It's just musing. You're not responsible. Nobody is holding you to this. There's no guilt associated with it. Just let your mind drift off and wander. Get in the hammock. Not this time of year in the northern hemisphere. But, you know, get comfortable in the hot tub, in a tub, at the gym, wherever, in your car. And just say, what would it be? Like, just really, if I got to choose. A lot of people say win the lottery. Is that really that satisfying? You win $10 million in the lottery. Okay, now I don't have to work. Yay, I'll play golf all day. I guess I'll, you know, just knit a lot. No, is that going to make you feel at the end of your life, like, wow, it was incredible. I won the lottery, and then I stopped doing anything. You know, what is your passion? What do you care about? And I'm not talking, again, from you should, you must, the world demands it. I'm saying, what if you could? What if you could? What if it worked out that you could? And what is going to make it more likely that that will happen than having that in your mind as a vision? What do you want?
You're absolutely right, and it ties in perfectly. There was a class I was in this weekend about every human being having an extraordinary life, and so the game we're playing out of these 100 people in the class is listening for the people in our lives to have extraordinary lives. And we talked about having a horizon. And if we're stuck on the beach and we're enmeshed in the sand and it's just like things are dirty and we're dealing with the struggles of our lives, that's all we can see. But if we look out towards the horizon, which is our vision, our long-term goal of what's possible, not the winning the lottery, like you said, that's not fulfilling and there's nothing that you're actually generating, but actually generating your vision. And then you look to your right and left and you see the people who are on the beach with you. And that might be you as a career expert, your husband, your best friend, your brother, sister, etc., and all those people on the beach with you, that you get to enroll in those people wanting you to have that same extraordinary life, it's pretty amazing when you realize that if you look far out and you have that long-term vision, that it pulls you into being a different sort of human being. And that's the game I'm playing as a human being, and that's why I love having people like you on the show who uplift, motivate, and inspire, quite frankly, especially with your book. I think that people need to hear the message that it's okay to say, this isn't the career I want, and it's okay to step out of a job you're uncomfortable with, and to make empowered and powerful choices and courageous choices that will take you down that road towards utter joy and fulfillment and towards that vision on the horizon of what you really want your life to look like, and give yourself permission for that to be okay.
That's the thing. It's a very funny aha for me as a career coach. I used to teach a lot of workshops and, you know, do a lot of very hands-on with classrooms full of people. It was super fun. I don't do that anymore, but it was such an incredible steeping for me in being with people who are job hunting and who are applying these techniques and watching the reactions in the room when I'm saying things that are, you know, more startling, newer, very unfamiliar from the standard job search approach, and watching the reactions and the ripples of fear and trust and the questions, you know, oh my God, that sounds so radical. I'm going to write to the hiring manager. Like, how I could get in trouble. And you really have to peel back the layer and say, thank you for saying that. Because probably a lot of people were thinking that. How would you get in trouble? You know, these folks are not going to come to your house and slash your tires. I'm almost certain.
Oh my God.
You know, but we're trained. And when you get control of your career and your mojo fuel tank grows and you view part of your job search schedule as actually getting in the garden or getting on the treadmill, if you like that, or dancing in front of YouTube, you know, or whatever you love to do, drawing, painting, playing the viola, cooking, whatever. You realize that you have a lot more power than you thought. This is my message. Like, I'd interview these candidates and I'd see people not in their power, of course. They're trained to be on a job interview, quiet, silent, waiting for the question, answering the question and shutting up like, oh, we're not in school. And I'm not being critical, because I did the same thing on job interviews. It's a script and we know it too well. And we shut up and like we're trying to get approval. It's gross. And I would see other people come on interviews who were totally in their power and they were just having conversations, because their real view was, if this isn't the right place for me, that's fine. I'll go to the next place. They wouldn't want to work in a place that didn't get them the way they are. And that's what I say incessantly in this book, is if they don't get you, they don't deserve you.
Because you don't just need
a job. You deserve a job that celebrates who you are more than maybe what you've had in the past. It's an aspiration that will, you know, that you will get to more quickly by calling, you know, the places that are not a good fit for you, not a good fit, and walking away. And it's hard. And you feel it in your gut. And you're like, am I doing such a stupid thing? No. It's like you cannot fail by listening to your gut. It evolved over however many thousands of years to steer you in the right direction.
Keep us alive to make sure we don't get eaten by the lions, tigers, and bears. And we've forgotten about it, like you said. So I think trusting your gut and not being afraid to be self-expressed is exactly what your book is about, and just taking the reins of your career and getting in the driver's seat. And Liz, I know we're almost out of time right now, and I could talk to you for hours. I mean, clearly you have such amazing wisdom to impart and such wonderful message that I know all of our listeners will get so much out of from your book. And so your book, Reinvention Roadmap, people can basically find it wherever books are sold, I think, correct?
Yeah, Amazon, wherever books are sold. We just learned it's going to be in FedEx stores, which is awesome.
Awesome.
And, yeah, it's colorful. You'll see it's got a little like a sunrise on the front cover.
That's fantastic. Well, again, for any of our listeners out there who aren't familiar with Liz Ryan and her amazing writing abilities, drawing, everything she does, you can find more information. Liz, I know you write regularly on LinkedIn, on Forbes. Are there any other websites or anything you'd like our listeners to check out?
Well, the easiest thing, come and see us anytime at humanworkplace.com. But the easiest thing, really, Jennifer, is just to follow us at Human Workplace on Twitter.
Awesome. Perfect. So again, at Human Workplace on Twitter. It has been an absolute delight to have Liz Ryan on the show with us today. Thank you for joining us from Colorado or wherever in the world you might be. And thank you again.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you for the contribution you are to humanity and for uplifting people. I really mean it. And I'm very grateful that you were able to join us today.
back at you.
All right, guys. Have a wonderful rest of your week. If you miss the show live, you can always find it on iTunes at Get Yourself the Job or on the archive of the LA Talk Radio website. And have a fabulous week, everybody. Thanks, Liz.
Thank you.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.